From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
Welcome to Capitol Connection, and a very happy new year to all of our listeners. We are ringing in the new year by taking a special look at the upcoming 2018 Nebraska legislative session. State senators are set to reconvene at the state capitol in just a few days on January 3rd. And the one thing we know for sure is that this is going to be an exciting and very interesting session. The state capitol is where the decisions that affect you most are being made. State senators will take up everything from the budget and taxes to educational freedom, First Amendment freedoms, free speech on college campuses, abortion, assisted suicide, gambling, human trafficking, and much more. That's what is at stake. And while there is no shortage of issues to debate and work on, there is a shortage of time. This year is considered a short session, meaning the legislature has 60 working days, so they will meet until about mid-April, where they will take up a broad range of issues. And the legislature operates in two-year cycles, and this is year two of two, meaning that everything from last year carries over to this year, including bills that were introduced that either stalled or they didn't have time to debate. Those will carry over. That's where they will pick up, as well as the committee chairs and the makeup of the body is the same as the previous year. So state senators will also have the first 10 days of the session to introduce new legislation. Last year, well over 600 bills were introduced, and that number will only increase this year. And a question I like to ask people is, do you know who your state senator is? Most people are familiar with our United States senators, Ben Sasse and Deb Fischer, and hopefully your congressman as well, but not enough people know who their state senator is in the Nebraska legislature, who will be voting for them and your family on whether or not Nebraska chooses to legalize assisted suicide, whether we offer parents more choice and freedom and education for their children, whether we respect and uphold First Amendment freedoms. How will we combat human trafficking in our state? Will we allow gambling to be expanded? And will we protect the most innocent and vulnerable among us, unborn children in the womb? These are just some of the issues being talked about and decided by our state senators in the Nebraska legislature. And who better to give us some insight and a special preview into what life is like inside the Nebraska legislature and some things that we can expect to see in this new year than a sitting state senator? Well, I'm thrilled and excited to have with me on the program today Nebraska State Senator Tom Brewer from Chadron, representing District 43 in the great state of Nebraska. And Senator Brewer is a decorated United States military veteran. He's served our country valiantly for decades and now serves in the Nebraska legislature. Senator, thank you so much for your service to our country, the state of Nebraska, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Senator, we are just now days away from the start of the 2018 legislative session, and everything I'm hearing is that senators are gearing up for another rocky, contentious session that's going to be dominated by the budget. What are you anticipating this year's session looking like?
It's a short session, so we have to do more faster. Last time, if you remember, we ate up 30-some days just on the rules, so I wouldn't say our last session was that productive. There was a lot of hard lessons learned about procedures. Of course, Senator Chambers is excellent at educating you, sometimes the hard way, on how things are done. And if you don't understand how to counter some of the moves that are being made to either stop legislation or in some cases to take legislation that can be toxic and stick into other legislation where you don't know it's there, it is a constant game of trying to do the things that you want to do and others trying to keep you from doing that. And the body is split pretty much down the middle. We will have the same chairs, so there will be a lot of continuity that we didn't have when we started last year. The issue we have this year is you now have freshmen who know how to write legislation. We have a 10-day period to submit it. The problem is we will probably only get our priority bills. Not much more than that will happen because a lot of the fight will be over the $200 million deficit. Property tax will be our number one issue besides the budget. I hope we can come to a resolution. The governor will have a plan. The only other plans out there, Senator Ergman have what's called 50-50, and that because some will see that as too much property tax relief, will probably stall that. There won't be enough votes to get it out of a filibuster. The problem will be is if we do nothing and we sit on our hands on the property tax issue, I believe that the petition drive will catch fire and there will be a petition on the fall ballot to have a complete change in how we do property tax so that it is more of the three-legged stool, one-third property, one-third sales, one-third income. If that happens, it will fundamentally change things and will cause a lot of challenges for us.
Senator Brewer, this will be your second year, your second go-around in the Nebraska legislature. Was there anything you were really surprised by, having been through one session, that maybe you weren't expecting when you ran for office?
The challenges of getting in, getting set up, and getting going are always difficult because you cannot hire your staff until you're oathed in. Well, that's day one. So you have no one initially to help you get the office set up, get organized. And if the person you replace, like in my case, is leaving with not a very pleasant handover, if they clear the computers, if they take every file, if they cleanse that office so you have nothing, then it even adds a level of difficulty to deal with issues in the district and to do your legislative parts here. And so I was living on Red Bull for about the first 45 days because you were almost going 24/7 just to stay up. I was blessed to have an outstanding staff, and they approached things like I did with a military attitude that we got it done no matter how long it took. They were normally there till 8 or 9 every night. They were in early in the morning, and they did that for the entire session. They'll be there, and they'll do the same thing this year. I think the difference is we know how to do it this time. We know who to work with. So it'll be a different – it may be a short session, but I think we might get more done just because we know how to do it.
And Senator, you mentioned your leadership coming from your experience serving in the military, and I want to make sure I get it right. How many years did you serve?
Over 36.
Over 36. And I know you've had just an extremely – decorated career, including receiving the Purple Heart. So what has that been like for you, moving from one battlefield to perhaps a new battlefield in the Nebraska legislature?
The hard part is when you spend a lifetime living the duty, honor, and country piece of this, and when you have someone give you their word, it was a bond. And you come here and you find out that someone will tell you something and 15 minutes later will stand there on the floor and vote different than that. And I'm a, you know, it's not a good Christian thing to be unforgiving, but I struggle to then give them that same degree of trust that I had before. I think we have to have a level of understanding, trust, and commitment to these jobs. And there is that feeling that some are almost like, flags blowing in the wind. It turns as they think they need to. And I'm one that I believe you should have a foundation. And no matter how hard it blows, you stand solid and you hold that because people trust you. And at the point that trust is gone, you're just an empty vessel.
And Senator, you mentioned your Christian faith. What is it that drives you to put your life literally on the line for our country as you did for many years and now continuing to not just serve Nebraskans, but really to make a bold stance for the values and beliefs that so many Nebraskans cherish for life and family and religious freedom?
I don't know that a lot has changed. You know, I lived every day in the military in a way so that people understood my values. I think you have to always be that strong, that pillar, that person, that those individuals that you lead, and that's the burden you have in a position of leadership, is they're all counting on you to be the strong one, the one that is able to weather the winds. And in combat, it's hard. You tire. But I was, I think from a very young point in my career, was able to go without sleep a lot. Now, maybe Ranger School was part of what conditioned me for that. But many times you were the last person to bed every night, and you were the first person up every morning because you had to be there setting the example, and that's hard. I would like to think that same attitude is carried over here in the legislature. I'm there at the Capitol early in the morning. I'm there late at night. We have Bible study, and I think that helps you to reset your values and focus on what's important, because you can get so wrapped up in bills and lobbyists and all this stuff going on, you really all of a sudden forget the people who elected you and why you're there. And when you do that, I think that your time in that body is probably going to be pretty short, because you're not that conduit to be the voice of the people.
Well, I've seen firsthand already truly the tremendous impact and difference your leadership and values have already brought to the Nebraska State Capitol. As we head into this year's session, is there legislation that you are looking at introducing, or a bill that you plan to prioritize for this year?
Well, we stacked them up. We've got a number of bills from last year. And keep in mind that this is a bit of a true game of chess, in that if you pick a bill and you prioritize it and it's in committee or has yet to be presented to the committee, if it's a new one for this year, and it dies in committee, you just lost your priority. So you have to carefully work through and make sure that there is the support in the committee to get your bill through, or you really wasted that opportunity to get that bill pushed forward. I'm on the government committee and I'm on the banking committee. I joke that, for whatever sins I've committed in life, they put me on the banking and insurance committee, because there are painful things. But listening to hours of bank regulations, I try and find things to preoccupy my mind as we're doing that, but it is because we do it right after lunch is when the committee meets. So either you don't eat lunch and you sit there in hunger pain so that it does keep you awake, or you face the fact that you may fall asleep on television and injure yourself.
Senator, I'd like to ask you if you could give our listeners an update on an issue that you really championed this year and Nebraska Family Alliance was proud to lend our support to, and that was the issue of White Clay. White Clay, Nebraska, where infamously for decades four liquor stores sell 3.5 million cans of beer every year in a town of 8 people, right next to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. And for reference, this is actually, so first of all, it's a district you not only represent, but you actually grew up on the Pine Ridge Reservation. So what has this issue been like for you personally, and what does the area look like now?
Well, for, complete transparency, I'm a member of the Ogallala Sioux Tribe. On my mother's side, she, when we were younger, tried to instill traditional Native American knowledge and history and... But it was a difficult time. It was almost a time when you did everything you could to deny your native history, because it was not thought of in a very positive way. And so as I look back on it, those were kind of difficult times to grow up. We grew up on just the edge of the Pine Ridge Reservation. That's why I ended up going to Gordon, Nebraska to high school. But we lived, if you drew a line between Gordon and Pine Ridge, kind of about halfway in between there, relatively close to White Clay. We went to White Clay quite a little growing up. It was always a dark place. People laying on the street, just trash everywhere. It was just a very difficult place to go to and not feel like it is really one of the worst places on earth. That's the only way I can describe it. So when I got elected, I knew there were some issues with the Liquor Commission and the liquor stores, and as we pursued that, I talked to the Attorney General, and it was obvious that they were not meeting their requirements. The Liquor Commission then had a hearing here, brought in the sheriff, who I think for the most part was supportive of leaving the liquor stores there, which made absolute sense to me. It could do nothing but add to his job. And then he testified that there was not enough law enforcement, which was what caused the Liquor Commission to deny that license for the four stores and then close it. As it went through the channels and up to the Supreme Court, you know, I think it was a blessing that that decision was made, because in the meantime, I had a chance to see White Clay morph. We had about $100,000 that was used to bulldoze buildings, fill in cement, or fill in basements, push out some old trees, and just dress up the town. As the liquor dried up, the people went away, and it became a small town that was a normal small town. And then it, when the Supreme Court made their decision, it kind of green-lighted businesses. And if you go there now, there's a new Family Dollar store, a big, nice one that's doing great business. There's a couple other stores that are getting ready to open. And we went from a dark place to a normal place, and we aren't poisoning the community to the north. There was all of them who said that Highway 87 would be this road of death. And that hasn't happened. And I just, if you go there now and you look at it and you can't say that that wasn't a good decision, then I think you're so tainted in your desire to see those liquor stores there that you're not looking at the real world.
It's such a fascinating transformation, what has happened in that community since those stores have closed. And I've gotten to see that transformation firsthand. And my understanding, I don't mean to exaggerate here, but I think your life was actually threatened over this issue and the stand that you made. Why, despite all of the criticism, were you able to stick to your values and really see that this was accomplished?
I think that in my heart I knew it was the right thing, and that in the years to come they will look back on it and realize that we had an opportunity to right a wrong. 100-some-year wrong. And, you know, I may not accomplish anything else my time in this body, but if that is the benchmark, I'm okay with that, because those are people that I know. And in a situation, I was at a veterans powwow, I was at an honoring on the Pine Ridge, and there were many of them that came to me and told me about how much better their lives are. And even the people that had been living in a bottle migrated back to their people and their families and started to become part of society again and not living in this bottle. And there are the liquor store owners and maybe some people that work there who are angry. And, you know, when they told me about the threats, you know, the State Patrol said, you know, we're concerned. And I said, well, listen, I spent 8 years in Afghanistan, having the Taliban try to kill me, and they didn't have any luck, so I'm not too worried about what's going to happen there.
Senator, you know, one thing that we often heard on this issue was that, you know, it doesn't matter. It's just alcohol. People are free to make that decision to drink for themselves. We shouldn't police that, and people will just buy alcohol elsewhere. But I also don't think people really fully understood the scope of the problem, and also the problem stemming from the alcohol. Were there things going on there in White Clay other than just people drinking that maybe folks weren't aware of?
There was the whole gamut of issues. You know, the alcoholism generated crime, whether it be theft or assault. It contributed to the massive problem with the infant alcohol fetal syndrome. It contributed to all of the requirements for law enforcement, ambulances to come there and have all the challenges that come with that, the expenses to the communities, whether it be on the South Dakota side or the Nebraska side. And in the end, there is a chemical challenge for Native Americans when it comes to alcohol, and you almost put them in a lose-lose situation by making it readily available where they can walk there. I understand the whole issue of, yeah, they don't have to necessarily do that as far as drinking. But I think there's a point. You know, if you were to use the example of a grade school and selling things you shouldn't sell right next to the grade school, yeah, the kids would have a choice on it. But should you do that? Should you set it up for failure? The tribe is trying desperately to address their alcohol problems. There are challenges they had because the Indian Health Services was taxed to the limit with this situation of all the alcohol. That's helped some now, but they're still struggling to find medical expertise in the detox and also on just the healthcare side of it so that they can have proper care on the reservation. What's happened this last year has gone a long ways to help them address the issue, though.
Well, I think if people look at what White Clay looks like now as opposed to a year ago or any point in our past before those stores were closed, people would be shocked to see what it looks like now. It's a very safe community, and it's just been an incredible transformation. And, Senator, I also understand your service goes beyond just politics. You really live out your values, and you go to the local prison here in Lincoln and minister to inmates and help do Bible study with veterans and Native Americans. Why is that something that you've really committed yourself to doing?
Well, I probably get a lot of comments. Folks say, you know, you're a fool because none of those people will ever vote for you. It's not in your district. Why would you take the time and go through the pain to do that? But I think that we have an obligation to help our fellow man. And senators don't spend time in prison helping and doing things like that because that's just not part of what most feel a passion for. But I think when you stop and look at the fact that they have made a mistake, many of them, you know, have asked for forgiveness and have a good heart, and they did do wrong. And it's not that they're asking to have their sentences shortened. They just want to have a better quality of life while they're there. And when we deny that, I think we really give them little hope for the future. And by these programs, we give them an opportunity to have a change of heart. And when they leave that prison, they become contributing members of society, and they make the world they come into a better place.
Senator Brewer, I can't thank you enough for your service to our country, the state of Nebraska, and the strong stand for family values and religious freedom and pro-life principles that you have brought to the Nebraska legislature.
Thank you for what you do.
If you would like more information on the Nebraska legislature or the issues that will be taking place this year, be sure to visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, where you can get all of the latest up-to-date information on the latest happenings in the Nebraska legislature and what you can do and how you can contact your state senator to make a difference and help protect and defend family values. Nebraska Family Alliance is the longest-standing pro-family organization in the state, and your voice for pro-life, pro-religious freedom, and pro-family values at our state capitol. If you want to make sure that your voice is heard and want to know when major issues will be voted on, be sure to join the Nebraska Family Alliance email network and stay up to date on the issues that affect you and your family. Your support and partnership with Nebraska Family Alliance helps us to advance family, freedom, and life here in our state and become part of the movement across the nation to restore the foundation of our country, the family. And with the legislature reconvening this week, there's never a better time to make sure that you, your family, your neighbors, your community, and church are aware of what's taking place at the state capitol. That's why Nebraska Family Alliance exists, and that's why this program exists, to help bring the capitol to you and to make sure that you're up to date on all the latest episodes and happenings from the Nebraska Capitol. You can subscribe to the Capitol Connection for free by simply opening up the podcast app on your phone and searching for Capitol Connection. Because what happens at the Capitol doesn't stay there. The policies crafted and passed at our state capitol affect the lives of real people on real issues, and it's essential that the citizens have a watchful eye and are paying attention to how their representative is voting. As always, for more information, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for Nebraska Family Alliance. Hoping you're joining us next week. Thanks for listening to Your Capital Connection.